welcome to Change Surfer Radio. For the next half hour, keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left as we present a sexy high-tech vision of our radically democratic future.
I'm speaking with Michael Hicks. He's the founder, coordinator of the Connecticut chapter of the Mars Society. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks.
Now, you're having your first meeting of the Connecticut Mars Society down there in Milford next Sunday. So you want to tell your listeners about when that's going to happen, where it's going to happen?
Yes, that's going to be Sunday, February 20th at 7:30 p.m. And at the moment, it's going to be at my house. But I don't expect that to change. It will be at my house. And if anyone would like to contact me for directions, they can reach me through email. And my email address is mhicks@greenwich.com. That's Greenwich like the town.
And what we're talking about here is the Mars Society, which is a national lobby for the exploration, colonization, exploitation, although we don't like to use that exploit word, but the commercial utilization of Mars. And before we get to that, tell us how you got interested in Mars.
Well, I've always had an interest in science fiction, and it's funny, I don't recall the exact moment when I became aware of the Mars Society, but I just know that once I did and I started looking into it, I just got very excited. It seemed like something had been missing for so long, and all of a sudden this really filled the niche. It's like, of course we should be going to Mars. So once I knew about the Society, I had to get involved.
And the Mars Society was founded, what, 5 years ago?
Roughly that. I think the actual official founding of the Society was more recent, only about 2 years ago. But they've been having an annual conference for about 5 years, and I think it was about that time.
They were referred to as the Mars Underground before the Society.
Right, right.
A bunch of astrophysicists and biologists and people with that kind of interest orientation.
And that kind of information about the history of the Society is available on the website, and they have a national, they have a website which lists all of the various chapters around the country, and there is a chapter in nearly every state now. Mm-hmm. Connecticut's been lagging behind, but we're going to catch up.
www.marssociety.org, and we'll tell that again later.
Yes.
Now, the founding of the Mars Society was coincident with the founder's publishing of a book called The Case for Mars, and the founder is Robert Zubrin.
Yep.
He's the current president. Mm-hmm. You have a section there that you wanted to read from his book on the Why Mars.
Yes. Why Mars? The question of taking on Mars as an interplanetary goal is not simply one of aerospace accomplishment, but one of reaffirming the pioneering character of our society. Unique among the extraterrestrial bodies of our solar system, Mars is endowed with all the resources needed to support not only life, but the actual development of a technological civilization. In contrast to the comparative desert of the Earth's moon, Mars possesses veritable oceans of water frozen into its soil as permafrost, as well as vast quantities of carbon, nitrogen, hydrogen, and oxygen, all in forms readily accessible to those inventive enough to use them. These four elements are not only the basis of food and water, but of plastics, wood, paper, clothing, and, most importantly, rocket fuel. Additionally, Mars has experienced the same sorts of volcanic and hydrologic processes that produce the multitude of mineral ores on Earth. Virtually every element of significant interest to industry is known to exist on the Red Planet. While no liquid water exists on the surface, below ground is a different matter, and there is every reason to believe that geothermal heat sources could be maintaining hot liquid reservoirs beneath the Martian surface today. Such hydrothermal reservoirs may be refuges in which microbial survivors of ancient Martian life continue to persist. They would also represent oases providing abundant water supplies and geothermal power to future human pioneers. With its 24-hour day-night cycle and an atmosphere thick enough to shield its surface against solar flares, Mars is the only extraterrestrial planet that will accommodate large-scale greenhouses lit by natural sunlight. Even at this early date in its exploration, Mars is already known to possess a vital resource that could someday represent a commercial export: deuterium, The heavy isotope of hydrogen, currently valued at $10,000 per kilogram, is 5 times more common on Mars than it is on Earth. Mars can be settled. For our generation and many that will follow, Mars is the new world.
And Dr. Zubrin's book also makes a lot of technical arguments, and a lot of it is about the technical feasibility of getting to Mars. He argues, for instance, that the costs that NASA had estimated for getting to Mars were wildly overestimated. He actually was at NASA, right?
Yes, he was. He actually was a senior engineer at Lockheed Martin, and I believe they were doing a lot of work with NASA, which is how he got involved. And I may be a little fuzzy on that, but again, please feel free to look it up on the website, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 89, President Bush had called for a new space exploration initiative, and there was time, I believe they called it a 90-day plan put together, where they proposed this big orbital space platform and basically the building of a mothership type thing to carry everything over to Mars that we might need and back again. Needless to say, the price tag on that was quite high, nearly $500 billion. Part of Dr. Zubrin's approach is to make it the cost much more realistic, to kind of adopt a live-off-the-land strategy and not necessarily take everything in the kitchen sink along with us, but rather to make do with the resources that the planet itself has to offer and thereby reduce the cost quite significantly. He estimates that we can do it somewhere in the $20 to $30 billion range, which is not insignificant. I'm not saying that's an amount to be sneezed at.
Over a period of years, many, many decades.
Right. Mm-hmm. If we were to spread that out over two decades, with the first decade being the development of the hardware and whatnot, and then the second decade being actually taking the trips, I think it's estimated it would only be something like 15 to 20% of the current NASA budget, something that seems to me well worthwhile for the purpose of opening up a whole new world to human exploration and settlement.
And Dan Golden, the head of NASA, has been on board with this idea. He's talked about a mission to Mars as well.
Yes, I mean, there are quite a few people who are very excited about this. The main problem right now is a political one, that we need to build some grassroots support and get some lobbying done and get politicians to realize that the people are definitely behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll vote accordingly.
purpose of the Mars Society, although it's got many, many different diverse subcommittees and projects, including proposed social and political visions for a Martian society and the projects for terraforming and biology involved. Everybody in the Mars Society has one project or another. But it seems like the principal project right now is a political one because, as you point out, because most of the folks seem pretty realistic that the commercial rationales to get to Mars are not strong enough to convince a Boeing to put up the $30
billion. Right. And you know, that's understandable. I mean, businesses are in business to make money, and there's a lot of risk right now. So we've got to convince the government pretty much that they need to get behind a sustained effort. And that's been the traditional model throughout history. I mean, you think of Queen Isabella backing Columbus and Great Britain in the 19th century backing the Hudson Bay Company to go out and explore the Canadian Arctic. And that's just how these things get done.
If only there were some Martian slaves we could convince Boeing to bring back. Or more realistically, some Martian diamonds and gold buried there.
Well, and that's the argument for deuterium, of course, that it is such a valuable element that it might eventually be commercially feasible to go just to bring back that one element. Yes, the main goal right now is to build the society's membership, and we're going to do that through education and outreach, and also, as we grow, making ourselves known to politicians in all stages. I know Senator McCain, the current presidential candidate, has been approached several times by the society.
He said he was quite shocked, actually, by how prolific the lobbying activities of the Mars Society were, that they seemed to be popping up everywhere.
Well, that's a good sign.
Yeah, exactly. And now, I want to talk just for another second about Zubrin's technical arguments. One of the things that's very important, some space wag has said that the key to space exploration is only three things: propulsion, propulsion, propulsion. And the problem with all space exploration is that if you have to take all your fuel with you, then the amount of weight that you have to lift off from and to propulse at the beginning is huge. And so Dr. Zubrin has proposed that we send a platform to Mars, a robotic platform to Mars, to produce fuel there that we could then use for the return trip. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Basically, he ran an experiment several years back. He got a small amount of money from Martin Marietta to demonstrate a simple chemical engineering technology for transforming elements that are actually already in the Martian atmosphere into rocket propellant. And he built a scale model, and it worked at 94% efficiency. And so that is basically the idea, that we would fly over first a small processing plant, let it operate for several months, and then when we had a basically full tank for the return trip, that's when we'd send the people over.
Mm-hmm.
And the other nice thing is that Martian gravity is lower than Earth, so we don't need quite as much thrust to escape.
Now, another problem with the Mars trip is that dependence on the environment would require that we begin to grow things there so that people could have recycled oxygen and have fresh vegetables and whatnot. You know, this idea has fallen into a bit of disrepute because of the Biosphere 2 experiment, which has actually now been taken over by Columbia University. It's entirely respectable. But the Mars Society has its own Biosphere 2 going now, doesn't it, at the Arctic base?
In a sense, yes. I believe they are running that sort of experiment at the Arctic base. The whole idea behind the Arctic base is that there are more similar conditions to the Martian environment here on Earth than there would be on the Moon, for example, which is one of the arguments that people who think we're a lunar base will say that that's a natural training ground to go to Mars. Not really. There's enough dissimilar elements.
The gravity's minimal compared to Mars.
That's one thing. I'm trying to recall some of the others off the top of my head, but
well, Mars actually has an atmosphere. We can't breathe it, but.
And the other thing is, Mars is temperature-wise is more similar to Earth. It's just colder, mm-hmm. whereas the Moon has extreme temperature swings, and it gets quite hot.
Right.
So that's another variation. But that's one of the goals of the Arctic base, is to try to help support that idea that we can grow our own food and make do when we get there.
And live together. And just the idea that people could live together in that environment. Of course, we've had a lot of social extremes, people living in extreme environments here on Earth.
Yeah.
But
I think the key to that is motivation. Yeah. And history has shown that people will endure all kinds of hardships for the right motivation,
mm-hmm.
willingly, voluntarily.
One of the reasons that people have proposed for going to Mars is the fact that we could learn a lot in terms of trying to terraform or to transform the Martian environment, because a lot of the things that we would need to do to Mars is the reverse of what we need to do to the Earth. In other words, greenhouse gases. One of the proposals is that we should be if we ever get to Mars and start to terraform it, we would be releasing a bunch of greenhouse gases in order to warm the place up and protect it from radiation. I don't know if you've looked into that. That's pretty far in the future for the Mars Society to be.
Right, and there's even some controversy. There are factions that believe we shouldn't be in a rush to terraform.
The Red Mars faction.
Exactly. you're referring to the
Kim Stanley
yes.
Robinson books. Yeah.
Yes.
Green Mars, Red Mars, and Blue Mars, and the Red Mars people are the ones who want to keep it the way it was, and the Green Mars ones are the ones who want to terraform it. which is the reverse, again, the politics or the reverse of what it is on Earth.
Well, certainly there's going to be lots of opportunity for science of all kinds on Mars, whether it's actively trying to terraform the planet or just surviving with the under the conditions that already exist.
Mm-hmm.
And even if we do go the terraforming route, we shouldn't have any illusions that we're so masterful that we're going to turn it into a garden overnight. It will probably take centuries.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Kim Stanley Robinson's recently been honored by, I believe it was NASA, that they chose the flags of the of any future Martian mission to be green, red, and blue.
Ah, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, it's a tricolor flag, three stripes, and green, red, and blue. Speaking of which, his books, which are very, very well-researched hard science fiction books that span a couple centuries of colonization, terraforming of Mars, and the political ramifications as well, have been optioned by Cameron.
Yes,
James
Mr.
Cameron.
Titanic himself is planning to do a TV miniseries, is my understanding.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's something we can all look forward to as being a very, very special event.
And there's going to be two movies coming out.
Yes. Mission to Mars is coming out this spring. And there's another one in the fall. I'm not quite sure what the title is of that. But mm-hmm. It does seem Mars is getting in the media quite a bit lately.
It seems really necessary to have this this kind of utopian and very, quite visionary vision of what we might be able to do on the next planet out. Because the enthusiasm for space exploration died down a lot after we got to the moon, that with the shuttle, the Challenger disaster, and unfortunately the most recent Mars mission failures, all of this seems to contribute to a certain amount of cynicism, skepticism on the part of the public that there's no real purpose to us to being in space. And this notion that there, you know, that there's a grand project that faces all of humanity on Mars might rekindle that.
Yes, and it's an ongoing topic of discussion in the society, how we best communicate this sense of eagerness, excitement about the possibilities of going, what it could do for us. You know, there's a very strong argument to be made that all of Western civilization, for the last several hundred years, has been based on this kind of dynamic exploration and frontier, you know, exploring and moving into new frontiers. And right now we've kind of altered that from one of a physical frontier to a cyberspace frontier.
Mm-hmm.
But that can't last forever. And we really, if we're going to avoid becoming kind of calcified and you know, more rigid over time, then we're going to have these new frontiers opened up. And it's not hard to see, you know, the ways this is happening. I mean, you can find a McDonald's in virtually every country on the globe now. We're becoming one big homogenous society. And the way we will restore creativity, you know, and just that whole dynamic spirit is by opening up a new frontier. And Mars is the logical choice.
Greg Baer has a book out on Mars, actually several now, called Moving Mars. And those are a very nice set of novels.
I did read that one. That was, it's a little, I believe there's some kind of teleportation science, as I recall.
they take Mars someplace entirely different. But
the political relationship between a well-colonized Mars and Earth, which had remained rather stodgy.
Exactly. Well,
very interesting.
Everyone had gone through some kind of mandatory psychotherapy so that there, you know, there's like no anger, no extremes of emotion anymore
right.
on Earth.
But it's a very, it's not a far-fetched scenario in the sense that if you think about the relationship of the American colonies, the British Crown, it was much the same thing.
Well, I want to thank you very much for coming on with us, Michael. And again, tell us about the meeting that's coming up to found the Connecticut Mars Society.
Yes, we're having an initial planning meeting Sunday, February 20th at 7:30 p.m. And anyone interested in attending, please drop me an email at mhicks. Excuse me. Let me start that again. My email address is mhicks@greenwich.com. I can also be reached by phone, 203-874-0312.
And the website for the Mars Society is www.marssociety.org.
Yes.
And the book that you got inspired by and that people should first touch base with is The Case for Mars?
Yes, The Case for Mars, written by Dr. Robert Zubrin.
Zubrin, Z-U-B-R-I-N. Thank you very much for joining us, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS-FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about radical democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. Also, check out past and future shows and myriad relevant links at the website, www.changesurfer.com.